Welcome to Headlines. This is David Lichtenstein, and this week our program is going to be about the message of Pesach. We have a fantastic program. We have with us the Pesach of America, Hagoyin Harav Reb David Cohn. We will have Hagoyin Reb Yehuda David Bleich of Reb Yitzhak Elchanan, also the noted author. We have all the way from England, Dayan Donner, the famous orator. We have from Riverdale, also Rashiva Reb Yitzhak Elchanan, Rabbi Mordechai Willig. And all the way from Los Angeles, he was supposed to be with us last week. Instead, he's with us this week, Harav Gershon Bess. But getting Rabbanim this time of year is exceedingly difficult. They have thousands of shilas to answer, in particular Rav Bess, the noted author of the Sefer on Refuis, on all the medicines, which he published in conjunction with the Star K, is, I'm sure, flooded. He apologized, so he couldn't make it last week. He made it this week instead. We were supposed to have with us this week the Rosh Yeshiva of South Fallsburg. He apologized. He must be flooded as well. He will make it at a later date. You can listen to us on Matzah Shabbos from 11 to 12 midnight on WMCA or on 570 AM or on the Nachum Segal Network. You can listen to us Monday morning at 11 AM and at NachumSegal.com. You can find all our shows at www.headlinesbook.com under audio or the podcast section at iTunes. We now have a hotline. You can listen to all our previous shows at 732-806-8700. You can email us any questions at info@headlinesbook.com. So let me share with my listeners a wonderful thought. You know, there's an Avudraham. He was a Talmud of the Torah, and he writes in the Seder Haggadah. He wrote the first Pirush on Tefillah. He says that before we eat the matzah, we make seven brachas. And he says, just like a kala is asura to the husband, she's not mutter to the husband without seven brachas, we make seven brachas under the chuppah, so too is the matzah not to be eaten without seven brachas. And there's a little differences as to what the seven brachas are, but we have the three brachas by Kiddush, we have the Ber Priya Gofen, we have Mekadosh Yisrael Vazmanim, you have the Shechiyanu, then you have the Ber Priya Dama, then you have Asher Galanu, then you have Maitzi Lechem and Aretz, Alachilas Matzah, that's seven brachas, and then we eat the matzah. So he compares eating the matzah to a chuppah. And it's really a Gemara. The Gemara says, somebody who eats matzah, Erev Pesach, he doesn't wait for the Seder, Kilu Boil Arusasei Beis Chamav, again, comparing it to a kala. And there are in Chazal many other references to matzah and a chuppah. The great moment when we finally eat the matzah after those weeks of cleaning and the great moment arrives, it's like a chuppah. What is the comparison, I ask you? Now we know the men do wear a kittel like they wear under the chuppah, but what is the comparison? So let me share with you something beautiful. When we were ever by a chuppah, did you ever notice the way the chassan and the kala look at each other? You know what they're thinking? Here they are. No matter what age they are, the bride is looking at the groom is looking at the bride, and what are they thinking? We're building something new, something amazing, a new beginning, a new house. They have so many questions, they're so curious, so much promise, prospect, so many options. Where will they live? What will they do? Endless opportunities, potential. Right? It's endless. Their journey begins. It's like a birth. And do you know that we all begin that way too? All of our lives, we have endless possibilities. And then we begin to take paths. And we get a little fixed in our paths. And sometimes we get stuck in ruts. And then when we get married, we say, you know, it's going to open new doors. I'm going to meet somebody. And maybe through this other person, all those options of what I thought I could be, through this other person, doors will open again. And many times they do. And then sometimes we get stuck in ruts again. And you know, all pastries, all chametz, once started out as simple flour and water. And then we mix it and we knead it, and it becomes a myriad of things. It could become a roll. It could become a rye bread. It could become a babka. It could become a croissant. It could become a brioche. It could become a seven-layer cake. It could become a wedding cake. It becomes so many different things. But once it is, whatever it is, that's it. It's fixed. But when it was just at its essence, it had could become one of any one of those millions of things you see on the covers of magazines, any one of those things, and then it was had an infinite of possibilities of endless. You know, when we go back every Pesach to the birth of Klal Yisrael, what does that mean? What are we saying? We're saying when we eat that chuppah, when we eat the matzah, we are Klal Yisrael. We are the most ancient of people. The Jews are the most ancient religion that they're out there. There's no religion older than us. But yet, Nar Yisrael Vehavai, we are yet the most young of people too. The most ancient of people. But open up a paper. What do you see? We're most young too. Spry, young. Every place you see this some Jewish fellow coming up with a new idea. Nar Yisrael, we've retained our youth. Somehow, it's an effort. But disappointment often slides under our door. How often does discouragement call you on the phone? Or how often when you wake up in the mirror, does washout look you in the mirror? But every Pesach, we're given an opportunity. We make the seven brachas, and we go back to your chuppah, to your own chuppah. The men wear a kittel. The women, they dress like kalas, they dress like princesses. And everybody makes the same seven brachas that they make under the chuppah, like chasanim and kalas. They scrub away the chametz. And then they eat the holy matzah. You go back to the essence, flour and water, back to the beginning. And what do you say when you eat the matzah? I believe that the journey can start again. What will I be tomorrow? We have begun marching again. The beginning is here now. That is the story of the matzah by the Seder. Come, let's begin again. Let's listen now to the wonderful Pesach message from Hagoyin Harav Reb David Cohn. So, Pesach is coming. We're by the Seder. There's so many different messages. What's the message of the Seder?
I would say as follows. I believe it's really a machlokas. In the Gemara, it's Leil Geula. That's what the concept of Pesach is all about. HaChodesh is Alechem, because it's, why do we start from Nisan? Because it's Chodesh HaGeula. Let's define Geula. And there's Machlekes Rav and Shmuel in Psachim Kuf Tazayin Amid Aleph. What's the essence of Maschul Begnus U'Messayim B'Shvach? That the Mishnah says that we start from something which is negative and we end up with something which is positive, that we appreciate what Hashem gave us. So Rav says that the correct nusach of Maschul Begnus and Asayim B'Shvach is Mitchilo Ivdei Avedizorei Aveseinu V'Achshech Kervonu Hamakom Avedosai. Shmuel says it's Avodah Mayinu. And I believe that the machlokas between Rav and Shmuel is a machlokas that they have in Sanhedrin Sadek Zayin Amid Beis to define what Geula is. Over there is a machlokas when Mashiach is coming, that Rav says that Kolu Kolakitzen, the Zman that Mashiach could come already arrived in the time of Rav. All we need is tshuva. And Shmuel says, Dai lovely as Bavele, whatever it means, it's interpreted to mean we went through enough. You don't need tshuva for Mashiach to come. And the Gemara says it's also a machlekes tanoim. And each one throws psukim at the other one until the Gemara says shosak avliyezer, which most Rishonim would interpret to mean he gave up. I don't have an answer to your kasha, Rabbi Yeshua. And Rav and Shmuel argue in the same way. What is the machlekes? I believe that the interpretation is that according to Shmuel, gula means that the shibud, hagolius, is no longer on us. No one is coercing us to do anything we don't want. That's what gula means. So it's the gulas haguf. No one is on my back. I'm a free person. And therefore, we went through enough yesurim that we should be zeicha to this gula. According to Rav, Geula is a relationship, that if a person doesn't have a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he can't be considered a redeemed person. And that's why you must have tshuva. And what I am saying now, according to Rav, is really a Beferish Ramban in his preface to Chumash Shmos, where the Ramban says Shmos is a parallel to Bereshis. Bereshis is a story of our Ovis, and it's Maisa Ovis, similar bottom. Similar bottom is the reflection of what happened to Klal Yisrael as a result of what happened to the Ovis. And he says that's why Shmos ends with building of the Mishkan, where you had Hashra Shechina, which means we met the Madrega of the Ovis that had the Shechina above their homes. And the Ramban's lesson is, we went out of Mitzrayim, Nevoichim, Bamidbar, Be'eretz, Leilohem. We were in Geulim. Ad sheshovu el mailas avoysom, v'oz yechashvu Geulim. When we built a Mishkan, and we had Ashra Shechina, means we had a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then it's Geula. And that's Rav and Shmuel all over again. The Geulas HaNefesh is Mitchila, and now Kelvonu Hamakam Lavaidasai. According to Shmuel, Gulas Haguf is enough. I believe we should aspire to the Gula Shlema, which certainly means the Gulas HaNefesh. I believe that's the whole Kavana of Gula. That somehow, and that's why in Zohar HaKadosh, Matz is called Nichla Dem Nehem Nusa, the food of Emunah. That's really what the kavana should be when a person eats matzah, and as we say in Yiddish, he pravas a seder.
And Reb David, one last question. What is the message we should be giving? It's the night of the Higadat Labincha. What is the message in a time when it's probably, and this is a very big statement, it may be as hard to bring up children today as it's ever been? The Higadat Labincha is certainly as important today as it's ever been. What is the Higadat Labincha today? What is the message for our children today at the Seder?
It seems to me that to speak generalities, it's hard to go into specifics. Higadat Labincha simply means that in order to maintain our Mesorah, without Mesorah we have nothing. In order to maintain that, a person has to see to it that the parents have relationships with their children that are close to their children. The Torah doesn't say anything about Ava. It says Kabe da Savicha da Simecha. It doesn't say you're mechuyev to love your parents. But there is a Zohar HaKadosh, I think the Chachmas Adam brings it. It's almost like understood. There has to be a connection always, and there are people who never have nesyonis with maintaining this connection because of the situation of what's going on outside the Dalet Amos Shel Halacha, the holiness of a Jewish home. It's unfortunate, but a person has to do his utmost, and grown children have to do their utmost to show this connection both to parents and to children. Connection. That Vigadol Labincha means make sure you're always connecting with your children.
Well, thank you very much. It's always a kavod gadol to have you with us.
The feeling is mutual. Thank you, and have a chag kasher v'sameach. In the Ukraine, where my parents come from, everyone says have before Purim. They say have a freilich in Purim and a kasher in Pesach. In the Ukraine, they used to say, Purim is going to be freilich, never mind. But because sometimes some people are high, so it should be a kosher of Purim. And when it comes to Pesach, the way people work to prepare Pesach, it's going to be kosher. But make sure that it will be a freilich of Pesach as well. So if it was before Purim, I would tell you, have a kosher of Purim and a freilich of Pesach.
Amen.
Kol tov, be blessed. Shalom.
Now let's listen to the wonderful Pesach message of our Goyin HaRav, Rabbi Yehuda David Bleich. Welcome to our program.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Could you, Rabbi Bleich, can you tell us what is the message of Pesach?
Let me begin with the story. The story is probably apocryphal, but it's about a Rav. Before Pesach, his wife was scouring the house, and she was working herself to the bone. And he finally exclaimed, he said, you already have done much more than is required by the Shulchan Aruch. To which the Rebbetzin responded by saying, if I relied on you and your Shulchan Aruch, I would long be eating chomets on Pesach. Now, obviously, the Rebbetzin was engaging in hyperbole, and the Rav was right. Noshin Tzidkoniyos do many, many things that are not absolutely required. And the basic question is, why Pesach of all times and the mitzvahs associated with Pesach more so than any others do we exercise such scrupulous care, expend so much effort and exertion? Why were these mitzvahs zeichet the things that other mitzvahs weren't zeichet? Manishtana ha-mitzvah hazu mikol ha-mitzvahs. It's been repeated in the name of the Brisker Rav Zecharin Levracha. He said that whatever zehirus and shmira, whatever chumrah somebody can come up with regard to taking care of the preparation of the matzahs, isn't simply a hidur in the mitzvah, like somebody who seeks out a beautiful esrig. That's a hidur mitzvah. It's not part of the mitzvah itself. For matzahs, said the Brisker Rav, it's part, intrinsic part of the mitzvah shmartim es hamatzos. There is a basic requirement to safeguard, to preserve the matzos from chometz. And then there is a mitzvah kiyumis. It's not mandatory, it's not obligatory, but whatever additional meticulousness you can exert in preparing the matzos for the Seder, that is also a mitzvah in and of itself. I think that there is a proof, a riot to the Brisker Rav from a Ran in Psochim. The Ran in Arv Psochim, Paskins Lahaloche, that you can buy chitin min hashuk, you can buy ordinary wheat and grind it, watching it carefully to prevent chometz and bake matzahs with it. He then proceeds to say that it's mitzvah min hamufchar. It's exemplary way of fulfilling the mitzvah is to have shmira mishas katsira, to watch, guard, safeguard to the matzahs from the time of the cutting. And he adds that chumrah is only for the matzahs that you use at the Seder, for purposes of fulfilling the mitzvah of ushmartim es hamatzahs. For the rest of Pesach, the Ran says there's no such hidur. So the problem is really very simple. If all of this is to prevent the wheat from becoming chometz, then what difference does it make whether it's the matzah for the Seder or the matzah that you're eating the rest of Pesach? Even if there is the slightest possibility that a person should be careful so that it doesn't become chometz, there's no real difference between the Isra of chometz, the first night of Pesach, and the rest of the week. So there seems to be something here that's a part of the definition of the mitzvah shmartim es hamatzos, and that's what the Brisker Rav meant when he said that this is part of the fulfillment of the mitzvah, even though it's not an absolute requirement. That leaves us with trying to understand that why is there a obligation, or even if it's only a chumrah, with regard to scrupulousness in preserving matzahs on Leil Pesach, that doesn't apply to the masses the rest of the week. Why is there this particular aspect of Ushmartem Esa Matzis? It seems to me that the mitzvahs of Pesach are designed, each one, for a different purpose. Pesach, the Korban Pesach, is there to remind us of the Nisim of Yetzias Mitzrayim. It's a commemoration of the miracles that the Ribbono Shel Olam did for Klal Yisrael. Moror is obviously a commemoration of the Shibud, the oppression, the persecution, the bitterness of their lives. What is Matzah here? Matzah is not just a historical commemoration. Matzah, as we bake it, involves a great deal of meticulousness, scrupulousness, safeguarding. You have to be absolutely certain that there isn't the slightest contact with water before the dough is kneaded. You have to bake it quickly so that the dough doesn't rise. And this requires a great deal of hashgacha. The purpose of matzah is to remind us that the Ribbono Shel Olam exercises hashgacha, divine providence, over Klal Yisrael. It's one of the Ikrei Hu'amuna, and the matzah is there to reinforce the principle of hashgacha. If you talk about the hashgacha of Ribbono Shel Olam, the Ribbono Shel Olam exercises providence in two separate and distinct ways, and we see that reflected in the Pesach narrative. The Pasuk says, V'yavarti b'eretz Yisrael, v'yikesi kol b'chor, and the Baal HaGadol tells us that means first person, avarti v'yikesi, ani v'lei malach, ani v'lei sorof, ani v'lei shleach. It's the Ribbono Shel Olam b'chvod v'atzmai. He didn't entrust the actual Yitzias Mitzrayim to an angel, to a messenger. He did it all by himself. Apparently, everything that occurred in conjunction with Yetzias Mitzrayim that preceded Makkos Bechiras, the Ribbono Shel Olam relied upon his shluchim, he had his malochim, he had his messengers who exercised hashgacha on his behalf. From that moment on, it was Ribbono Shel Olam alone. The Ribbono Shel Olam also says, Ushmartem es ha-matzos, that's the mitzvah of Shmiru with regard to the matzah, Ki be'etzmayim hazeh hitzesi esivaysechem mitzrayim. Again, the same first person singular. Hitzesi, the same drosha, ani v'lei malach, ani v'lei sorof, ani v'lei shliach. The Ribbono Shel Olam himself took us out of Mitzrayim. He didn't rely on a malach or a messenger or a delegate to do this on his behalf. Apparently, if you're concerned about physical danger, what could have happened to our ancestors in Mitzrayim, for that the shmira of a malach is sufficient. The malach can preserve you from it. When the Ribbono Shel Olam took us out of Mitzrayim, so Agoda tells us, the Ribbono Shel Olam was mechashiv esaketz. He figured it out to the very second. They couldn't have remained any longer, because had they remained any longer, the redemption would have been impossible. There couldn't have been a gula. They would have reached a state of spiritual degeneration such that redemption would have been impossible. To be able to rescue Klal Yisrael spiritually, as distinct from physically, and to be able to do that at the last possible moment, that's only the Ribbono Shel Olam. Not even a malach can be so precise and so meticulous in exercising hashgacha. The hashgacha of the Ribbono Shel Olam himself is different from the hashgacha that is exercised through a malach. The basic shmira of the matzah is to preserve it from chimutz, from rising, from becoming chometz. That's mundane. It's physical. And that is sufficient that people are exercising the kind of shmira that is appropriate, approximates that of a malach at best, but it can't be more than that. And that can't, the normative obligation can't be more than that, because we can't even do what malachim do. We can't be as precise as malachim are. So there is a limited form of shmira with regard to chimutz. That's all the Ribbono Shel Olam demands of us insofar as physical hashkoch is concerned. And that's true with regard to all human affairs. Hishtadlus is necessary. A person has to do what he can. And when he does what he is supposed to do, what he's capable of doing, the rest of the hashkoch is carried out by the Ribbono Shel Olam. However, when you're talking about preservation from spiritual danger, when we're talking about ruchnius, there you need the shmira of the Ribbono Shel Olam. And with regard to the mitzvah shmartim es hamatzos, the Ribbono Shel Olam gave us a hidur mitzvah. The hidur mitzvah is not to imitate the malach. The hidur mitzvah is imitat yodei, to emulate the Ribbono Shel Olam himself, to act with superhuman and even super angelic effort in order to preserve the ruchnius of the Jew and the ruchnius of Klal Yisrael.
Thank you very much, Rav Bleich, for sharing the essence of Pesach, and thank you on behalf of all the women listening who have been working so hard for the last few weeks. Chag Kosher V'Sameach to you.
Chag Kosher V'Sameach to you and to the entire radio audience.
Thank you, Kolta. Here we have the Pesach message of Dayan Donner of London. Shalom Aleichem, Dayan Donner.
Aleichem Shalom.
So we have with us one of the truly great nights of the year coming up, Leil Shimurim, the night of the Messiah of Klal Yisrael, V'higadet Olabincha. Could you share with our listeners, what would you want to tell them? What is the message of the Leil Shimurim? What would you give over to our children? What is the message of the Seder?
Right. The Chasam Sofer in his Droshes says that the main theme of Seder night should be to discuss the koyach of the Ribbono Shel Olam to look after all of us individually. Don't spend the time discussing just halachos, what type of karpas to eat, and how you should have made the bedikas chometz, and how to bake matzah with all those yidurim. Spend time in explaining the Yetzias Mitzrayim, what the Revolution did for us. The moshul, tell your children there's such a thing called teva, nature. Who made nature? The Ribbono Shel Olam made nature. And the Ribbono Shel Olam is still the owner, the balabos of nature. The horaya, the proof is that water tastes like water at all times. And all of a sudden, the water in our cup in front of us turned into blood. Nature changed. Who did that? The Ribbono Shel Olam did it. How? Because nature always belongs to the Ribbono Shel Olam. And when the sun shines, it's wonderful daylight and it's warm. And in the middle of the day, it turns dark. What happened to nature? The owner of nature decided today, we'll change it and make it dark. So at the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim, the Ribbono Shel Olam proved to us that the world belongs to him at all times. There's no such thing as automatic. Anything that happens, well, the Ribbono Shel Olam wants it to happen. And this is all our lives, how things work. And we will see that the Haggadah, which was arranged by the Tannaim, every bit of Haggadah, not just the story, but loads of messages. For example, one of the parts of Haggadah is Arami Oved Ovi. Lavan chased the Yaakov Avinu and tried to kill him. How did this come into the Haggadah? And the Gaon, the Vilna Gaon, who wrote a perish on Tikkuni Zohar called Bir HaGaon, says, this is not just a story of Lavan in the past, but we are told by Chazal, Ma'ase Ovois Simon Labonim, whatever happened to our Ovois, Avon, which of the Yankiv, didn't just happen as a history, but they did for us, they davened for us, and their schusim for us helped us in the Torah Doyres. For example, Dr. Gaon, if you look at Yankiv Avinu with Lavan, this was the original model how a Gola should look like. Exactly the same as Mitzrayim. Yaakov Avinu fought Lavan. How did he do it? With a makkel. He took that stick and he peeled it, and that brought his Yeshua. How did Klal Yisrael in Mitzrayim work? Moshe Rabbeinu took a matter. Yaakov Avinu, when he left, or after many years in Mitzrayim, what did Laban's children say? Lokach Yaakov es kol asher lo'avinu. Yaakov Avinu is now taking everything that our father owned. What did the Yidden do in Mitzrayim? By his nafsas Mitzrayim. They took everything out of Mitzrayim. Yaakov Avinu, towards the end, it says, was Shloi Shoyomim, 3 days away from Laban. What happened with the Yidden in Mitzrayim? Shloi Shoyomim, after 3 days, Paro finds out what's happening. So they go and say, you see, that the whole Agoda, every word, every message, every little part of Agoda is not just a little story, but it's telling you how not only today, but all the years, the Rabban Shem has helped us and planned for us and everything, and even if things don't look well, they're going to go our way. A few weeks ago, there was a bus, I'm sure you've all heard this tragic story, of the bus 402 that left Yerushalayim at 5:30 on a Sunday afternoon on the way to Bnei Brak, and a few minutes on the Yerushalayim road, it went along and crashed in a lorry that was sticking out into the road, and the whole right side of the bus was ripped off. Many people were killed and many more injured. On that bus were sitting two sisters, both on the way to a wedding, one aged 17 and one aged 19. This was on a Sunday. On Tuesday morning, the youngest sister of 17, who learns in the Beshantif Seminary in Yerushalayim, said she wants to call all the girls together and hold a speech. And my daughter, who teaches in that seminary, was there at the speech and reported it to me. And this is what the girl said. My sister and me were on the way to a chasna. I had bought myself a dress beforehand for this wonderful chasna. Just before I left to the chasna, I tied the dress on and I realized it might be a centimeter or two too small. It's not sneer-stick. I cannot wear it. I had no other dress. I had to borrow a dress. My sister was also on this bus, and she had a similar problem, which I'll tell you in a minute. But let me explain, she says. As the bus left Yerushalayim, my sister was sitting on the right, and I was sitting on the left. Each one had a place of their own. And one sister said to the other, come across to me, why sit separately? And we argued who should go to whom, until in the end, the one on the right went to the one on the left. Because of that, as the bus crashed and the whole right side was ripped off, the one on the right was saved. My sister, who was sitting next to me, a bit of glass went flying across, a centimeter away from her eye. So the doctor, had that glass gone a centimeter nearer, she'd be blind for life. My sister also was going to the chasna, and she had combed and tidied her hair just before. And after tidying it, she realized the hair is also slightly too long, and she shortened it. Tyra Eden. This is what this girl said. You think that a centimeter makes no difference? A centimeter on sleeves of a dress, a centimeter on the hair, and a centimeter next to the eye. It's a difference between life and death. The Rabbi Shem looked after all of us. We have to do our little part. And Teva moves away from all of us. We're given mitzvahs and ma'asim tovim. And this is what keeps us going all the way along. We finish off what the Goan says on Vehisha Omdo. Vehisha Omdo la v'seinu v'lonu. B'chol doya v'doya oimdim oleinu l'chaveseinu. And the Goan brings a little story about the king who had a ben Yochid, his only son. And the son did something wrong, and the king had to send him into exile. But the king liked his son and needed to protect him, but didn't want the son to know that he's sending a protection. So he sent him into exile, and he sent private detectives without the son knowing. And the son one day was going in the street, and all of a sudden people started with him, not knowing he was the king's son. They started with him, and all of a sudden detectives appeared and helped and saved the son. 2 nights later, the son is at home, and there's a burglary. People are coming in to gun of things. And all of a sudden, detectives come along and catch these burglars. And a short time later, the son is going on his horse, and all of a sudden, the horse slips, and he falls off, and all of a sudden, the people are there to protect him. And this kept on happening again and again. Things went wrong, and he wanted the son first time, second time. It's just by chance that after many times, he realizes, Father King! My father is surely sending people along to help me. It doesn't work out on its own. Every generation we know that we are not respected and loved by the other nations. There's a sinner against us all the way along. And the only one that can help us, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Matzilenu Miyodo. This is what our Seder night is all about. Rebbeinu Shlomo has looked after us in the past. We all go through hard times, whether it's in Shiduchim sometimes, whether in business it doesn't work, whether in Shalom with our neighbors it doesn't work. Everyone's got their patches where they feel, I wish it would be different. That's not the answer. We can make a difference if we're mechazik ourselves, in chesed, in libidat Torah, in midas Torah, in emunah in Rebbeinu Shlomo. This is what Seder night is. Yal tel mincha b'yoyimahu leimor. We're going out now from Mitzrayim, and we feel the Rebbeinu Shlomo is with us, and b'siyata d'shmaya, HaKadosh Baruch Hu yatzilenu miyodom, b'viyasta tzedek erev yomeinu amen.
Thank you very much, Rav Dayan Dana. Thank you for joining us. Now we have the Pesach message of Rabbi Mordechai Willig, of Yeshiva Rabbi Yitzhak Elchanan. Welcome, Rav Willig.
Thank you.
So, Rav Willig, so many of us, we come to the Seder, we've prepared, we've spent 2 or 3 weeks, we've been kratzing the walls, cleaning and sweeping and baking, and finally we come to the Seder, and our children, maybe our friends, maybe we have kol dichfin, maybe we brought fryer people in, maybe neighbors, and we're sitting there by the Seder, and we want to say something to them, and we didn't have any time. We were so rushing. Mamish chaytfinetz ha-matzvus. We were running to do the mitzvahs. But you, the Bistach HaGadol Ador, you spend so much time learning. How do we inspire? Tell us something inspirational that we can share with our children. V'gadat al-Abincha, give over the Messiah. Share something with us.
The paradigmatic mitzvah of Jewish parenting, combining rich, experiential, and deeply inspirational tradition with fundamental and yet profound education, is the Haggadah. The word Haggadah is based on the Torah's command, V'higadata levincha b'yom ahu lemor, you shall tell your son on that day, saying. The Or HaChaim asks a fundamental question. The first and last words of this five-word phrase seem contradictory. On the verse, Kosoma leves Yaakov v'sagi livnei Yisrael, Rashi quotes the Gemara, Tomar b'loshon raka, v'sageid dvorim hakoshim kegidin. The word amar means gentle language. The verb higid means harsh language. If so, V'higadata lemor is an internal contradiction. Do we speak to our children harshly, v'higadata, or gently, lemor? The Or HaChaim suggests several answers. I would like to share with you a suggestion of my own. In general society, the practices of which are often adopted by Torah Jewry living in that time and place, two radically different methods of child raising exist. The first is disciplinarian. Children must be taught the rules and punished if they fail to keep them. In this way, the theory goes, they can achieve great things as their potential is directed by wiser adults and not wasted on the foolishness of youth. This 19th century attitude, captured in the works by authors as varied as Charles Dickens and Mark Twain, views discipline as an end in itself, as the very essence of the upbringing of a proper, virtuous, and accomplished child. Recently, an opposing theory has emerged. Discipline is terrible for a child's development and self-esteem. It stunts his ability to grow and achieve his potential. Hence the term positive parenting, in which the word no is almost removed from the vocabulary. Children are to be persuaded that something is wrong and not prevented forcibly from engaging in it. Misbehavior is handled by soft talk, explaining that an action is wrong. There are no punishments, physical or otherwise. In five immortal words, The Torah rejects both extremes. Parenting must begin with vigadata, with the discipline of harsh words. Red lines must be drawn, and a child who crosses them must be punished. A child who was never disciplined grows into an undisciplined adult, incapable of conforming even to the mores of general society, and certainly not to the more exacting norms of Torah mitzvahs. American neoconservative thinkers have attributed many teenage social ills to unrestricted, permissive parenting. These ills include drug abuse, sexual promiscuity, diminished attention span, and general underachievement. Apparently, children are not wise enough to set limits and develop their potential on their own. In Torah society, in Israel and the United States, this type of education has led to the abandonment of Torah observance in great numbers of youth growing up in Torah homes. Unrestricted exposure to modern general culture, given the twin developments of the decadence of society and the greater availability of modern media in the home and beyond, has overpowered the natural tendency of copying the lifestyle of the parents. Does this mean that the Torah endorses a disciplinarian approach? After all, we know that many youngsters were brought up that way and became high achievers and upstanding Jews. The answer is a resounding no, and for two reasons. First, such an upbringing stunts growth. In the short term, it produces results: higher grades in school, better behavior at home and in shul. But in the long term, such an education does not allow a child to do his own thing, to develop his unique talents and personality. Second, such a chinuch carries a significant risk of rebellion. Perhaps in earlier times, when we lived in a world of conformity, this risk was minimal. But now, a child who behaves and achieves because he is forced to do so may rebel as soon as the ability to force him is lost. Is discipline an end in itself, enabling a parent to control the child's development and brag of a high-achieving, well-balanced, well-behaved child? Chas v'shalom. Discipline is only a prerequisite for the primary challenge of parenting, expressing love and warmth, sharing your innermost soul, talking gently and passionately about love of God, love of Torah, love of Israel, love of all creatures. Yes, Vihigadata is no more than a necessary prerequisite for the lifelong responsibility and opportunity of Lamar, of teaching with love and by example, as the wondrous passage of one's children into adults takes place. In these five words, the Torah has taught the secret of successful Jewish parenting. Discipline your child only in order to teach him gently and lovingly for a lifetime. That is all. The rest is commentary.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Willy, for sharing your inspirational message, and a Chag Kasher V'Sameach.
Chag Kasher V'Sameach.
And lastly, we go to Rav Gershon Bess of Los Angeles, California.
And he's also the Mechaber, the author of Passover Medicines and Cosmetics, which is a must-have in almost every from a household. It's published in conjunction with the StarK Worldwide Passover Directory to Medicines. Welcome, Harav Bess.
Thank you.
Harav Bess, could you give us just a thumbnail? What does somebody do when they have some medicine? It's like an unmarked pill. What do we do in such a situation?
Well, if medically the person needs it and he doesn't have the opportunity to be able to clarify whether or not there is a chametz in it, then they would have to take the pill, because there are enough mekilim, meikar adin, that one could take it even if there is a chametz ingredient. If the person has the opportunity to check either some Pesach lists provided, like by the guide that I put out for this, for as a public service of the Kollel in Los Angeles, or his aftos has a very thorough list, and there are other lists. So that would, of course, would be the best if they can get in touch with somebody, with a pharmacist who's able to look up to see if there are any suspicious ingredients. All the ingredients, all the inactive ingredients are available for any prescription drug. And there are certain ingredients that are that can be a problem. For example, mannitol is something that is made out of wheat or corn, or polysorbate 80 sometimes is made from a wheat, even though mostly it's not made from wheat, it's made from corn. So the pharmacist usually will be able to see whether there's any suspicious-looking ingredients. Xanthan gum is another one that can be suspicious ingredient. But many, Baruch Hashem, many of the medications, even if with one company they may add a mannitol, other companies, the same exact drug, will not add a mannitol. So usually the pharmacist will be able to clarify, or they can call his Rav, who will do his own research to find out. It's interesting, when I was in Eretz Yisrael, I asked Rav Meir Soloveitchik, Nebuch Zatzal, great loss for Klal Yisrael, I asked him what, you know, whether he had any messiah or anything to say about this issue, about whether or not one should. And he said that his father, the Brisker Rav Zatzal, was makbid not to buy medications after Pesach from a pharmacist that didn't sell his chametz.
So even if it was Bishkarov, he lost Kelev?
Right. So Bishkarov, that's what I asked him about. So Bishkarov was machmir even on... Okay, that's the Bishkarov. Not bringing him. But I'm just saying, it was the minig of Klal Yisrael all through the generations to be machmir on this.
So why wasn't the Chazanish machmir?
Well, we don't know if the Chazanish was machmir or not. I don't know if it was machmir or not. When he writes in the Sefer, when he writes discussing the Iker Din, that is, but, you know, many, we know many, many, many things that the Chazanish writes in the Sefer Iker Din. So, you know, the fact that he discusses it, even though he himself has, you know, a little footnote, not a footnote, but in the bracket, which means in, like a later Madura, that, you know, he added on later that if it's Me'uru B'yadayim, I'm sure you saw it, Amanas to eat the chametz if it's made before in order to eat it. So it's not like 100% clear. And also, the Chazanish also, we see his Meikil on another Nakuda, which is not so postured in the Poskim. In the Poskim, constantly we see that by chametz, if it's, it has to be Nifsal Miachilas Kelev. Chazanish learns, like the Ran Taka says, Shal has had to learn of the Ram, but the Chazanish learns Lamaisa, that any time that the chametz is not in the position that it could be, that it could make a dough at, use it as a sap, make it to be mechametz something else, so he says it only needs lifts mechilas adam. Now, it's takam in asvara, that's, you know, one could surely extrapolate that from the run, but from the steamers hapoiskim all over, I mean, any of these chametzes to say that if I would put this in a bread, it would make it, you know, ferment, it's very rochik in the Metzias to say that. And yet, all the Poskim constantly are using in all these cases when it's mixed with other things. He says the that they, in these Nifsim Echilas Kalev. So Chazanish seemed to learn the Ran Mamet, not that it's a gilui in the din of Chametz because of the Royal Chameya, but it actually has to really be Royal Chameya.
Well,
just add one more point. Just say that the Bir Halacha says clearly that if a person takes a food, a chametz, and he mixes into it dvarim charifim, that because of the charifis you can't eat it. Like he asks as if it's like pashut. He says, isn't it pashut that that's not going to make the chametz be considered not nifsal me'achila? It's not going to be considered nifsal just because you were eared by davar charif that machmas charifus and now it can't be eaten. That's not going to make possible the chametz. So it's not like 100% pashut, you know, there's much like written and discussed about it. So if you're asking, you know whether there's a need for the list, I'm not known to be a machmir, and surely, you know, everybody is going to say that if a person needs a medication with hulu, that and he doesn't have available, that itaki should take it, no question. But whether it's been the Messiah of the Doiris, this is one of the...
So, Rabbi Bass, can I ask you two questions? By the way, the din of Lechama by Asa is usually when it's Nifsal Me'achilas Adam, not Me'achilas Kelev. So I think Chazanish is going, if it's not Nifsal Me'achilas Adam, he says it's not roi lechamavai, but if nifsal me'achilas kelev, it wouldn't matter anymore, even if it was lechamavai. It would. So, Rav Vess, let me ask you another follow-up question. Would you say that the chumris of that we're discussing, that it's a mashahu, or maybe that that we go lefnei mashuras hadin, would you do the same for kitnius as well, or only for chametz, or would you do it even for the minig of kitnius?
That also is a very good question. Now, it's just surely on the kitnius, and if there's a reason for medication, or if it's nifsal, really, that's not edible, I don't think that there's a chumra of kitnius in such a case.
So then let me ask you a follow-up question, Rabbi. Let's say vitamins that are not chewable, you know, those horrible, they smell absolutely awful when you open the bottle, you can't even believe you have to take one of them. Would those, in your opinion, for Pesach, in a case where, by vitamins, assuming that the issue is kitnius, would you say on those they would also need a hechsher if it was a kitnius issue or not?
It's not fair to ask me that question, meaning that personally I don't know that there's a messiah, any messiah to be machmir on kitnius that a nifsal or medication. And my assumption is that there is no such chumra that people took on. With chametz they took on. But with kidneys, etc., if it's not edible and it's not roi lachila, and if there's any tzairich at all, even vitamins, I personally would not be machmir on such a thing. So I don't know, but if you're asking a question, is there such a... Are there people that are machmir? I am sure that there are people that are machmir. And tov aleihem bracha. The question is, what about if there's kidneys and it's taka bottle b'shishim? In that case, and I know it was put in l'chatchila for that purpose, and it's an eichel, is that something to be machmer about or not? Now, it's like, you know, it used to be always that, you know, all the Pesach lists would have that you can take this orange juice without hechsher, as long as it doesn't have citric acid. Now, the citric acid is a mashahu compared, and the citric acid, maybe there's shayel chametz, but really, you know, we know it's, you know, basically from corn. So yet, you know, seem that maybe by Eichel it would seem that, you know, people were more lenient on it. I mean, we're still a little bit more machmir on the kidneys than we came bottle even before Pesach. So again, it's very hard. You know, I've discussed with some people, and they said, Avada nisht, you know, even if it's bottle, but Pesach. So it's very hard to, you know, to know exactly how far the chumra de Pesach goes. But I did see, and I'll share this with you, that I did see recently brought down, actually my son, Binyamin Zev from South Fallsburg, sent it to me, that he brought from the Rebbe, that in the Zohar HaKadosh it says that the Digdukim, that Klal Yisrael medagdik on Shmir of Chametz, is kemoi tachshite kala. It's like the adornments you make for a kala. Shekama shemosifin lo yoyser tachshitim, hu no yoyser. That just like a kala, the more that you beautify her, the beautiful more she looks. Kmo kein, afa chumra she yisro machmirim bepesach, shehem yapim mahajin es hamitzvah, and for each chumra the Rabbeinu Shalom is mispo erbanu. So he writes there that, you know, and I just thought of the mamash the marshal, like with a chasana, go to a chasana, like every detail, and it's not necessary. Chasana works with just plain, you know, tablecloth. But it has to be with these flowers and with this decoration and with the mints on it. Everything on it. Why? It's for my son. It's for my daughter's wedding. I want it to be beautiful. So that's how you're saying in the Zohar HaKadosh it says that it's not necessary. You can get along. And the wedding will be perfect. The same kedushin, the same chuppah. But it's when HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out of Mitzrayim, when he made us into an ummah. This is our yontif together with Rabbi Nishlam. The Melech and Klal Yisrael, the Kala. So the Zohar is telling us every digduk we do to show HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's like beautifying the Kala.
And we have the Rekeach that says that the seven brachas before Achilas Matz is like the brachas by the Chuppah.
Very good.
So it's consistent. So by best, we've never had the honor of having somebody from Los Angeles. We've had from most corners of the globe. So before you sign off, perhaps you could give us a thought. We have many people listening who are going to want to say over something nice by the Haggadah, by the by the Seder. Give us a message.
Hey, that's a toughie. But I'm also a Talmud of Rabbi Miller Zatzal, Rabbi Avigdor Miller Zatzal. And the avoda of this night is to give over the Messiah and to give over the emunah that is dor achad dor, generation after generation, father to son, father to son, not like Lahavdil Elef Avdolas, the Goyim, that somebody had a dream and somebody had an epileptic attack and he told his things, and the fact that a billion people know about it today, they all know about it that one person said something. But the only religion in the world that is able to claim that something happened in front of a million people, which is a sheker that can't be made up, the only nation is only Klal Yisrael. So the Rambam actually says that it's only Klal Yisrael that was able to say that there was nisim performed not to some disciples or not to some Arab Bedouins, but rather in front of an entire nation, a Kabbalah Satayra and the Yetzias Mitzrayim. That's what our emunah is based on. And unfortunately, I think, and others, greater people think, that not enough attention is paid to actually clarify the emunah to our children, that then Chalila, when they're 19, 20, 21, and suddenly they become confronted with another lifestyle and with other things, they're not prepared. I was speaking once to the Tolner Rebbe, Shlita in Yerushalayim, and he said, Emunah to the kingdom. If to teach them Emunah, we can't. We always went with osmosis, but it doesn't work like that. And we have to clarify clearly why the Messiah of Klal Yisrael is a true Messiah, and the fact that there's millions of people and billions of people that believe other things. What go back, and what is all that based on? That's really the avoda of the Leil of the Seder. And it's interesting to note, somebody had to fax me just yesterday a few lines that Rav Dessler Zatzal had written, that it seems Rav Dessler during the wartime was alone, and somebody invited him to come to the Seder, to his family Seder. And the Rav Dessler writes amazingly, I don't know if we can swallow it, he says, inviting just, you know, somebody to the Seder to come join me for my Seder is like somebody invites his friend, come, join with me, we're going to daven Ne'ilah on Yom Kippur. He says, just like, You don't invite him. You know, as he says, the night of the Seder is such a heilig nach to give over the Messiah of Klal Yisrael becoming an Ummah through HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We can't waste it with, idle talk and just, having a good meal. So I guess if there's a lesson that Rabbi Miller had always emphasized about the Leil Seder, is the big avoida of giving over with clarity the emunah to our children. Amen.
Thank you very much. It's been a great honor to have you, and we wish you all a Chag Kashuv Sameach.
Amen. Thank you.
Kol tov. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Ben.
A Chag Kashuv Sameach to all our guests. I look forward to speaking to you again after Yom Tov. This is David Lichtenstein for Headlines Radio.